All right, we are live. Lions Collective on Wednesdays usually. Today it's on Tuesday, given New Year's Eve. Last week we had a holiday, so we had a different time. It's been an interesting last 2 weeks. But today we are joined by Colton Pouncey. He is back in the mix. Will Birchfield still, you know, he's got a baby, a lot of things going on with Will. He could be joining, so if he does, you know, that'd be awesome. If not, enjoy the time. We'll take care of it today. I'm your host, Crunchtime Sports Zone, Jeff Iafredi. We've got Detroit Football Network Zone, Justin Rogers back in the mix as well. And, you know, no football this week, at least from the Lions. No game. We talked about it last week, but we have a big game this week. Dan Campbell spoke to 97 with a ticket, so there's some things that kind of get to today. And Dan spoke about one of the more interesting things, which I was looking forward to it, even though I knew the answer. Playing starters against the Bears. I mean, we knew what Dan was going to say. I think there was a 0% chance this man was going to come to the mic and say, yeah, no, we're going to bench everyone on the roster, especially when the whole motto has been grit. I've been on the side of I wouldn't mind seeing some guys that are probably hanging in there. I know, Justin, you kind of rephrased the question. It was a good question. You guys handled it. If there's guys that are already kind of dealing with injuries, I think the approach should probably be, and I'm sure Dan thinks the same way, a little on the smart side. If the guy's dealing with an injury, doesn't need to play. It's a meaningless game. But there are other guys that probably could show things. But what are your guys' kind of thoughts on the game coming up this weekend, playing starters versus not playing starters? And, Colt, you could even add in your thoughts on just missing the playoffs because we didn't get you last week to chime in on that.
You want to go right off the bat, Colton, on thoughts on missing the playoffs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it was kind of trending this way. Like, they had to, you know, find a way to win some games down the stretch and find some consistency. And they weren't able to do it. We all knew what they had to do. They had to win some games. They didn't do it. When I look at the season as a whole, they were just so inconsistent, and they never really found a rhythm and got into a flow of things, whether that was in games, over the course of a stretch. They just weren't able to do it. So you can look at the trenches and say that's probably an area to fix in the offseason. But in terms of them missing the playoffs, I'm not too surprised. They had to win like their final three games, and they lost. When they lost that Steelers game, you're looking at like a less than 5% chance of them making it. It actually kind of worked out where if you actually beat the Vikings, you at least give yourself a chance in week 18. But that was a letdown performance on Christmas. A lot of players in the locker room were saying they did not want to play on Christmas after they already played on Thanksgiving. Seems like some guys probably their heads weren't in it after losing the Steelers. You know, they'll tell you the effort was there. My eyes tell me something differently. So yeah, I'm not too surprised they missed it.
I didn't have a lot of problem with the effort in that game. I went back looking for it, you know, cause I kind of anticipated it would be there, and it didn't show up for me on film the way I thought it might, or I suspected. But man, sloppy is probably the best way to put it. Maybe mindset, head not in it, is fair. But look, anytime you end up -6 in the turnover column, like that's a tough day in the office, right? Like I had looked it up and I think at -5, and there was only 18 games in the Super Bowl era where a team had overcome -5. And I think you get to -6 and it drops to like 2 or 3. You know, sloppy snaps, fumble from Gibbs, who suddenly has butterfingers after, you know, pretty tremendous reliability, through the early stages of his career. And, you had a jackpot ball from Goff. You had a premature throw from Goff. It was just sloppy all the way around. And, you know, I mean, look, the offensive line was problematic once again. It's been a story of the whole season. And I don't know about you, but Van Ginkle is just fun to watch. I mean, that dude's just everywhere. It felt like he forced all 6 fumbles on his own. I know he didn't, but felt like he intercepted the deep ball. Felt like he forced every fumble. Felt like he looked at Goff, forced him to throw prematurely. Like that dude just killed the Lions on Thursday, and it's fitting. I mean, going into that Pittsburgh game, I think we all picked the Steelers. Is that correct? I'm sorry, we all picked the Lions to beat the Steelers.
I was gonna say I did not pick the Steelers.
My bad.
Yeah,
like, yeah. I know this team has been inconsistent all year, but I really thought everything was setting up for this to be such a meaningful game coming up in week 18. You know, scriptwriters, whatever you want to say, like it felt like it was going to be the game of the weekend. And just the way they kind of went out like lambs is jarring, disappointing, but I think as Colton said, like, it's kind of fitting, you know, this is just what this season was. It was a big letdown, and they fortunately maybe ripped the Band-Aid off early for you guys.
Yeah, I think the conversation that stemmed from that game, and it's been repeated and repeated, and I hear it the most, and you two are very level-headed, right? This is why we have these conversations. I'm not so level-headed, so this is where the balance comes in. I go a little crazy sometimes. I say dumb shit into the microphone. But for you guys, this is where I'll ask you. I've been asked the most this week about the Jared Goff stuff and the conversation, right? And he has, I think, the last two games. He had a last week against the Vikings, and people go back to the – which I don't know why they use – it's the random two examples. He's the playoff game against Washington, all right, even though – you know, one, they lost, they were out of the playoffs, and the other one, they got eliminated from the playoffs. People bring up the, what, close to 10 turnovers, whatever it is. Even though if you watch the game against the Vikings, really, I mean, we can watch the game and see that some of those snaps are just they bad snaps. He did have, what, two interceptions in that game? So, mm-hmm. So okay, those are on Goff, but people act like four of the five or whatever, four turnovers, every one of those were on Goff. But anyway, I digress. What's the conversation revolving Jared Goff? I know Dan had his back today and shut it down right away, but where are you guys at with just kind of the Jared Goff conversation? You know, people questioning whether you can win with Jared Goff when it comes to his contract, and, you know, people watch on Sunday night, two mobile quarterbacks running around playing backyard football. Where are you guys at with the future with Jared Goff here? Because he's stuck here, obviously, his contract. I think people forget that, but just the narrative around him as of right now.
Time is a flat circle, Colton. I mean, I feel like This is a repeat of the Matthew Stafford conversation that we had in this town for several years. Can you win a Super Bowl? Can Matthew Stafford win a Super Bowl? And the answer was always yes. You just need to surround him with talent. Like, Jared Goff has been to a Super Bowl probably with, you know, less talent that he's had at peak times in Detroit. Certainly was knocking on the doorstep there in 2023 and 15 wins last year, right? Like, he's a QB that most of the time is incredibly efficient. The turnovers that you bring up in these two games are no longer indicative of the larger body of work. You know, I think when Goff got here, he kind of had this propensity for that one really ugly mistake a game, whether it resulted in a turnover or not, like just a throw directly to the defender where he didn't see something, overthought something, panicked. I don't think you see that anymore. I think you see an accurate quarterback. I think you see a smart quarterback. But he is a pocket passer, right? And the league has, I don't want to say moved away from it, but the position has evolved. You know, most guys entering the league now are dual threats. Goff is not that, but it is the horse you saddle your wagon to. And so you have to build around that. They have built, you know, we'll see what it looks like this offseason, but a ground game behind two dynamic running backs. They've given him a really nice array of pass game weapons. And what they lost this year that was working so well for them, obviously, was the offensive line. And so you build better protection. You build a wall around your quarterback. He can obviously operate in the pocket. And, you know, the last piece of this, and it's true for all quarterbacks, you need a defense. You know, it can't be one side of the ball dominated. And so, you know, you put pieces around Goff, just like the Rams put pieces around Stafford and got it done. And this is a win you can win you a Super Bowl. I have no doubt.
Yeah. I feel like the conversation around Goff really took a turn after that Christmas game. And I get it, the turnovers, but like, were people watching him play football the previous, you know, however many games? I feel like he's put together a really good year given the circumstances. He lost his OC that a lot of people attributed his success to. He lost his all-pro caliber center and another really good Pro Bowl caliber guard in Kevin Zeitler. And, you know, guys were dropping like flies. You had St. Brown that was playing hobbled late in the year, Sam LaPorta with the back injury, Cleef Raymond kind of getting in and out at random points this season, rookie wide receiver and Isaac Kisla. So, I don't know. When I watch him play, I feel like I have a different opinion of him than maybe national media. And I feel like that's probably always the case, like local media versus national. But I think he's put together a really good season. And before that game, he was at 32 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. How many teams in the league would take that sort of production? A lot of them, really, including the team they lost to on Christmas there. So, you know, Brad Holmes said it a couple years ago, it's easier to get worse at quarterback than it is to get better. And I think that's true of Jared. So I don't know where this conversation is taken. I feel like some people have try to say, oh, the Lions are stuck with Jared Goff. I'm sure they're happy to be stuck with Jared Goff. That's why they signed him an extension. And to me, it's like your opinion of Goff, I feel like if anything, watching him this year should be that he can elevate his game under worse circumstances, because he has worse circumstances than he did last year. And I think he's played better with those circumstances. And so I think, you know, like with any quarterback, he's going to be better with more time to throw. You know, all those things play a factor. Like, you want to look at his numbers when pressured. Look at most quarterbacks' numbers when pressured. You'll probably see worse numbers overall. So I think Jared's been pretty solid this year. Obviously, the record isn't what you want to be, but I really wouldn't put that on Jared, which a lot of people seem to be doing after that game. Like, I don't know, there's some Rams writer on Twitter that I was kind of going back and forth with over Jared. And just the whole narrative, like, that you can't win with him. Like, they've won a bunch of games with Jared Goff as their starting quarterback. So to me, you know what he is. They know what he's all about. They think that he's good enough for them. If that's the case, and you invested in him like they did, go out and get him a revamped offensive line. You got to fix that. Get him a center that's going to keep him upright. Give him time to throw. There's so many times throughout the season where if he had like a split second more, you know, he's launching one downfield. The Browns game comes to mind where if he had a little bit more time, maybe a few of those are completions. There are random points throughout the year where I'm just like, I don't think this is a Jared Goff problem. And I still feel that way at the end of the year. And I feel like his numbers suggested and his play has overall.
Colton, 7 losses with rushing yards under 100 yards.
Yeah. Like,
there is a direct correlation. If you can't run block, if you're putting the offense behind the chains in second and long and third and long, Goff carried him a few times this year to wins, but he's not a guy like you want to throw it on his shoulder. You need a ground game. And yep, this one had one game sub 100 yards in 2024, and that was Buffalo, right? Like, Buffalo ran him out of the gym. But seven this year, or is it 8 now? I've lost track. But they've lost every single game where they've been held under 100 yards. And to me, like, that is the indicator. I don't even, like, the pass pro hasn't been great, but the run blocking just took such a massive, massive step back this year.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Yeah. And that's, I think you can win with Jared Goff. I mean, it's clear any quarterback, right? You give him a run game, you give him protection, it elevates their game. We saw in the Menesee championship run, I went back and looked at some of his stats through that run. He played excellent in the playoffs. And the narrative before that was he's not a good postseason performer. So it's funny how these narratives keep coming out and he keeps doing things that counteract the narratives. And I think the best point you can make about Jared is this year with all the adversity faced, he played extremely well. Now, I think people, like you kind of just alluded there, Justin, looking back with the lack of production in the run game and kind of how the Lions offense has been stagnant at times. I think that brings up the question, how did the Lions kind of get here? How did they fall from being NFC North champions to now being essentially risk of being last in the NFC North and having a fourth place schedule, which I think, you know, there's probably a lot of things to point to, which is why the offseason is so interesting, because there's a lot of probably angles to take, starting with the offensive line coordinator talk, which we'll get to. But in your guys' mind, just kind of analyzing the season, you guys have covered every single game. How did the Lions end up in this position? I know it's complex, but what's the best answer you have for Lions fans?
I'm going to try to go on spot.
Yeah. We just skip over the first question because we got to dig deep into this topic. I just have a really hard time, and I hate putting it on him in this way because he's genuinely one of the better human beings I've covered, but the timing of the Ragnow thing really screwed them. And he has every right to make the decision he made. I don't think he misled the Lions that he was considering it, that he was weighing it. I think it was a very tough decision for him, and I think it's one that he continued to agonize over and feel guilt over. The fact that he came back, I think, was a manifestation of maybe some of that guilt that he felt. But by making that decision when he did, put the Lions in a really tough spot to adjust and adapt. You know, I don't know if they would have re-signed Kevin Zeitler knowing that Frank Ragnow wasn't coming back. I don't know if that inherently solves your problem, but you certainly could have maybe found a better solution at center. You know, maybe they believe Graham would be able to carry it, and if they did, that was, you know, a mistake. Not that Graham is a bad player, but I would say an average one at this stage in his career, with some below average moments. But for Ragnow to step away in June, you know, you can't draft a replacement now. You can't sign a replacement. They might have signed the best available at that point, Tristan Colon. Like, that tells you what the landscape looked like at that point. And look, I know the brain drain of the coordinators and the coaching staff certainly mattered. I don't think the chemistry and the cohesion of the coaching staff was ever quite close to what it was 2023, 2024. But, you know, I'm going to keep pointing to this offensive line and just the way those dominoes fell and the timing, the way they fell, really, really handicapped them this year.
Yeah, I agree, Justin. I do think the timing was kind of rough on Frank's part. And I know he was probably listening to his body and did the right thing for him. But, yeah, to do it so late, it's hard to adjust from that. The only thing I would say, I guess, to counter that is, you know, they've had chances to, you know, draft his replacement or successor in past years if they wanted to. Could have gone that route. It seems like they kind of did that this year with Tyleek Williams and DJ Reader. So, clearly, like, the future plan is kind of something that's been on their mind. But I don't know how much of an inkling Frank was giving them at the time, probably keeping them in the loop. But, you know, they didn't really address it before he retired, and then it kind of left him in a vulnerable place. So, yeah, I think a lot of it starts with the offensive line, with the protection, with the run game. The inconsistency of the run game down the stretch really hurt them. And Jahmyr Gibbs, it was like if he wasn't rushing for, you know, 180 and three touchdowns, they weren't winning games. That's kind of what it felt like down the stretch. So, you know, you got to find some more consistency next year. Defensively, I really think Kelvin Shepard was doing a good job at the beginning of the year. I know we'll get to him in a second, but first half of the season, that defense was kind of humming. And you're like, all right, it seems like they've turned a corner. He's picking up where AG left off. They got some guys healthy. And kind of once the secondary went down, kind of turned to a different script there. But even late in the year with the run game, that was sort of alarming with the defense. But yeah, I mean, I think you just point to the trenches and then maybe even the coaching staff, like eight new coaches. That's hard. I feel like a lot of us just kind of glossed over that. Maybe we shouldn't have. Maybe we just put too much trust in the roster and we're blinded by the offensive talent and the pieces in place with this young nucleus. But losing two coordinators, losing a bunch of key assistants and trying to make it work as it was last year, that's kind of hard to do. These are different voices and different roles throughout the organization. And that's a lot to handle in one offseason. So, you know, if they finish with 8-9 wins and that's their floor in a bad year like this with so much turnover, I think in some ways you feel a little bit, you know, okay with that. Like, hey, it's not where we want to be, but we don't think we're far off. And that's what Dan said on the radio this morning. Like, I know nobody wants to hear it, but we feel like we're close. So if that's the case, then make those adjustments that you need to. You saw what went wrong. You know what you can fix. You're going to do the deep dive as you always do. And once you come out of that, figure out what went wrong and try to fix it. Because I don't think they're far off. And, you know, 8-9 wins is not what anyone wants. But when you have the talent here in place and just got to add to that, I think it makes it a little bit easier.
I just don't know how realistic it is to hold them accountable for not grabbing the Ragnow replacement, right? Like, you have to remember, the guy was 29, and I totally understand that he's appeared on 4,000 injury reports with another 8,000 different body parts. Like, the guy has been incredibly banged up. I know rumors were floated a couple years ago that he was considering this, and he pretty vehemently rejected that. But he was coming off such a great season, even walking into retirement. And so, do you draft a replacement at when he's 27 years old and just signed a contract extension, or when he's 28 years old and he's 1 year into a contract extension and he's Pro Bowl caliber? You know, DJ Reader, long in the tooth, final year of his contract. Like, that is the guy you draft a replacement for. That makes sense to me. I think they got caught with their pants down a little bit, to a degree, like, understandable, you know? I mean, it just, these situations happen in football where you can't predict it, whether it's retirement or, you know, career ending injury where some guy just gets hurt in a way that takes them off the table forever. And you know, it's just one of those things where I don't know, like I think I have a greater appreciation for the center position than I ever did.
Yeah. Definitely.
You know, you always hear left tackle and defensive end and quarterback are the most important position. Like, center's way up there for me now. Like, just in the way they handled these Minnesota games, right? Like the mind aspect of it to read and decipher and get people on the right page to protect your quarterback. Like it's a really, really critical position. It's going to be really interesting to know how they address it this off season. I continue to maintain, I do not think Ratlitch is the answer. Going with a rookie is obviously always dangerous. And I know people are going to bring up Lindbaum from Baltimore. I don't think there's any way he gets there, you know, whether they use the franchise tag or get an extension done. I just don't think that's going to be a guy that's available. So, you know, you might be patchworking again. You might draft the best center available, but that might not be your guy on day one. It might be a thing like, you know, Ragnow or Glasgow, where they play a little bit of guard early and develop, and then they're your guy in late 26 or early 27. I just don't know. It's clearly the situation or one of the situations to watch this offseason.
Yeah, the only thing I'll say with, you know, drafting a center is like, it's hard. It's hard balance, right? Because they had what they felt other needs. You go back to the 2024 class, drafting two corners, first and second round, I actually did not have a problem with that at all, considering that room and what it looked like.
Also, know, Ennis. I mean, let's be honest. The Missouri guy. Yeah.
I'm going to ride for my Mizzou guys. You know, that's just me. I would have been fine with them taking them in the first. Probably not so much now. But, yeah, I mean, two corners. Like, I totally see the vision. I understand why they did it. You know, trading a third to move up for Terrion and then trading that other third, I believe, for Carlton Davis. That makes sense to me. That was a weakness. Yep. And so it's like the center conversation is like, okay, what are you taking away? They tried to go the future need with maybe Manu and trying to draft him and be this sort of developmental player. You know, jury's still out on him, but he hasn't really shown that he can be the guy going into another offseason where you're going to have another guy, Taylor Decker, where a bunch of questions about his future, right? So do you draft a tackle this year? So those conversations were out there. I think the fact that Frank was talking to people about retirement and was so open about his body and the wear and tear. And yeah, he was 29, but you know, he's probably had the body of someone in his early 30s at that point. So with all the wear and tear they went through. So I don't know. You can always find mid-round centers. That's the only thing I would say is like, if there's a guy like a Tanner Bordellini that I think he's on the Colts now, he's having a good year. If a guy like him was available in striking range and you knew that Frank was considering this years prior, maybe even just the fact that he's injured all the time, maybe just get a high level backup center. Like, I don't think people would have a problem with that. But again, it is a tough conversation to have when you're talking about, you know, well, if we're taking a center here, what are we losing from where we actually drafted? So that's the only thing I would say, something like that. But it is going to be an interesting conversation. I don't know where you go at center. I think Linderbaum's probably a pipe dream at this point. Like, I'm surprised the Ravens will let him go. But if they do, it's going to be a bidding war for his services. Maybe Connor McGovern with the Bills. He might be available this offseason. I don't know what his price tag is going to look like or how much money the Lions have and are willing to spend in free agency, because we know that's not really their style. But maybe the trademark is where you go to fix this problem. But it seems like they're going to have to do something for sure.
Yeah, as you're talking, like, something more is popping in my head, and I think you look at the Cam Jurgens situation, right, in Philadelphia. Like, obviously, Kelsey was older and clearly more toward the end than Ragnow was, but if you could have drafted a center with guard capability, that if Frank stayed, now you have a guard, and if Frank left, now you have a center. Like, that probably is the approach that they could have taken, as opposed to, you know, signing Zeitler and then, you know, leaning on Mahogany or having to draft Ratlidge. Like, you could have already had that guard in place with some experience on top of that.
It is a tough balance there for sure.
Let's take a quick break. I'll tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, and then we get back, we'll talk more about the coordinators, but we'll see you in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. Use that code HMA, by the way. You get a $100 deposit matched up to $100. You should know what Sleeper is. It's one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world. and it only continues to grow. They earn some of the highest levels of engagement, and they have Sleeper Picks, which is their real money product. Connects friends over picks. Very simple. Choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do a pregame, live, or across different sports. Just pick more or less than the predicted stats. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. So share with your friends and get rewarded together. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring the show, as always. Plenty more to get to. I want to make sure we kind of get this. There you go. We're back. Three-man setup, by the way. All right. Let's talk about the coordinators. Let's get into it. Dan spoke about Calvin Shepard today. Gave him a big compliment, you know, about the whole season, and then kind of at the same time non-committal, because they are still in the season, so he's not going to probably answer too much about like coordinator questions. But we'll start with Kelvin. We'll get to the offensive side of the ball, but just with Calvin Shepard, just the job he's done. I know there was a time where we're watching the Legion of Whom, and you know Calvin's getting a lot of praise against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and now you've watched the last handful of games, obviously against Max Brosmer. I thought the defense played pretty well, but before then, just getting consistently gashed in the run game. Sorry, Kelvin, but gashed in the run game consistently. You know, it's just a fact. Where are you guys at with Kelvin? I still believe, I don't know if the Lions can afford to be in a process of kind of grooming guys. I don't know if they have time for that, but you might love the upside of Calvin Shepard. So where are you guys at with the future? At the defensive side of the ball, do you think Calvin's earned another year and another year for fans to be patient, or you think it's something the Lions are going to have to consider making a change at this offseason?
Colton, I'm going to let you lead here. Kind of feel like I hit pretty hard on this topic last week. Made some fans, obviously, with my opinions. So
I don't know this lore.
All right. Yeah. Well.
Yeah. Well, we don't have to get into that. I'll say for me watching, I think Calvin's probably earned another year. I think the conversation probably depends where you stand on the whole man versus a new system entirely conversation. If you're tired of the man system that Shep kind of took over from AG and you want to see him gone, I can understand that. You know, a lot of people will say that the system and the scheme is a little outdated. It hasn't worked for 5 years. If you want to go that route, I can understand it to an extent. I think if the health is there, they've proven capable of what they can do. The problem is the health just hasn't always been there in secondary or up front to work together. But in terms of Shep, you know, he was chosen for a reason. And that was a year coming off of a 15-2 season where you had this important decision to make at DC. And Dan has all these ties across the league with coaches and, you know, people from his past that he could have brought in to coach this defense. And he went internal with Calvin Shepard. And he did it for a reason, because he thinks that he was being ready and groomed for this role, learned from AG, knows exactly what Dan wants. And for those listening at home, what Dan wanted was a continuation of what they were already doing. He didn't want someone to come in here and rock the boat. So he is running the defense that Dan Campbell wants him to run. Now, if they want to have a conversation about where to take this defense from here, and you do want to retain Shep, I think it would be interesting to have that conversation, say, do we want to keep the heavy man system that we do? Do we want to tweak it? Do we have the personnel to do it? I do feel like with some of the free agents they have, with Amik, with Alex Anzalone, if you did want to, like, not an entire overhaul, but, you know, some changes, and you can bring in supplemental pieces to kind of fit a new scheme, if you wanted to do that, this almost feels like the offseason to do it to me, with some guys on 1 year deals and, you know, about to be free agents. And if that's the route, I almost think maybe bringing a Chuck Pagano, a guy that Shep knows pretty well, bringing someone in like a senior defensive assistant that can help him kind of remold the defense in his own image, if they do want to go that route, a bit of a change there. But if they want to stick the status quo, a lot of people probably won't be happy with that. But again, I think you can attribute a lot of the fall off to injuries and just, you know, maybe Shep trying to overcompensate for some of that in some ways, and things breaking down towards the end of the season. But I know it's a conversation that people are, you know, very passionate about these days, but I think Shep did a good job as a rookie DC, and I'd like to see him grow in that role.
I think the two biggest concerns for me were the massive amount of explosive plays they gave up.
Yeah.
And it really ratcheted up there during that 5-game stretch, starting with the New York Giants. Right. And I pulling the numbers off the top of my head, 'cause it's been a couple of weeks, but I think half of them, 27 of 54 20-yard plays, came during a 5-game stretch. Like, that's absurd. And I know you played some of the best offenses during that stretch in the Rams and the Cowboys, but it's still it's untenable to success to play that way. And then to see the run defense fall off the way it did, there was a stretch there where they were under 4 yards per carry. The success rate was decent. They have personnel that should be conducive to being a good run defense. Their front seven is healthy, right? As healthy as it's been all year. And yet they got run all over by the Rams. And then they got worse. They got run all over by the Steelers, which not a particularly good run team. I mean, one that's committed to it, but not good at executing. And look, they cleaned some stuff up against Minnesota, but I'm not going to bust out the pom-poms for that. Like, Max Brosmer, right? They were missing.
I'm not moved by Max Brosmer. Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, I don't even know his name, right? Like, three offensive linemen down. No TJ Hawkinson, no Jordan Mason. Like, Aaron Jones left that game. Like, it was not a good offense, right? And you could throw more resources into the box because you weren't worried about the quarterback who's racking up -3 passing yards and getting sacked a bunch. Like, good on you for getting right, knocking the pins down as they were set up. But, you know, I have major concerns about the defense, and I don't have good solutions. Like, I'm not schematically advanced enough to sit here and tell you, oh, this was the one thing they lacked, or this is the thing they need to change. But I would say a massive concern is, what does the safety position look like in 2026? And I think Brian Branch is going to get back. He might even be back by the start of the season. Little bold on that timeline, but it's certainly within the realm of possibility. But, you know, what percentage are he and Kirby to the guys that we knew they were when we declared them comfortably as the best safety tandem in the NFL, right? Like, are they 80% of that? Well, 80% of that's still pretty damn good. But are, you know, if they've each lost a step, like, the whole thing just kind of slowly starts to crumble, because it is built from the inside out. Like, that is the mold of this defense. It's the defensive tackles to Jack Campbell to the safeties. Like, that is the heart of the defense and the heart of the scheme. And you take away those two guys, and, you know, it's going to be really tough to execute the vision.
I also don't think it's a coincidence that the run defense kind of fell off a cliff kind of after Brian Branch went down. I think he's so important to what they do in the run game as well, but it probably kind of goes overlooked sometimes. But yeah, that safety position is going to be a major question mark next year. But in terms of going back to Shep, I mean, I think I'm curious to see where you stand on this, Justin, but like, is there some that kind of want to see a scheme change? Are you in that bucket, or do you think, you know, running it back and playing this sort of physical man style is kind of what they should do?
The one thing I would really, really like to see them add this offseason and change kind of schematically is the Barnes role. I think Derek Barnes is a good player. I think he is not a good edge. And I think they played him a lot on the line this year. I would estimate probably 2/3 of the snaps. And I don't know the exact total, but it was more than half. And he's just not a good player there. And I like the guy, I like the player. I think he has grown tremendously. I think he has a really high football IQ. I like the way he's advanced with some of his pass rushing off the ball, some of the blitzing stuff. I think he's a good run defender. I think he has good positioning with his coverage assignments and zone drops, but like, just doesn't do it on the edge. And so, you know, I think a lot of this kind of hinges with, do you bring Anzalone back, you know, whatever. But if you don't bring Anzalone back, I think you shift Barnes to that spot. And I think you draft a true edge rusher that isn't limited to pocket crushing body type. Like, go out and find a Nick Benito type. And I'm naming a player that's highly successful and easier said than done, but like, give me the flamethrower off the edge to line up alongside Aiden Hutchinson to cause some panic over there, or opposite Aiden Hutchinson, that can just win with just pure flame throwing speed. You want to have a pocket crusher as a five tech, you want a Davenport in there kind of over the tackle, fine. But give me, if you're going to do these five man fronts, give me somebody that can win with speed opposite Aiden Hutchinson.
It does feel like they were severely lacking some juice in the middle of that defense, and up front, I guess. just some speed, athleticism. You have in the back end with Kirby, but like a difference maker, a disruptor up there, whether it's in that Sam role as the hybrid role or opposite of Hutch. And you know, I think Al-Qadeem Muhammad did a good job filling in.
Absolutely.
But he's also not a guy that they trusted week in, week out to be a part of the game plan. There were games where he just wasn't getting snaps and other times where he was more relied upon. So I also wonder about his future a little bit in this defense while we're talking about Shep and what he's going to be able to do with it. There's so many between Al-Qadeem Muhammad and Amik Robertson and Alex Anzalone and the safety question marks with the injuries there. I'm probably missing some DJ Reader. Yeah, like you have a chance to kind of remake this defense or keep it status quo. And I'm really curious to see what they do, because if they bring in some juice, if they get better athletes or faster guys at certain positions, specialists in some areas, like I think you can probably retool it in a quick hurry. But the question is, do you want to go that route or do you like what you have? Do you want more consistency and say, hey, if we keep our guys who keep at it, like we're going to break through in year six running the same defense? You know, we'll see. But I'm very curious what they do there. And that might tell you a lot about how they feel about Shep and his ability to get this going in the right direction.
No, continuity's become a problem. Like it's a blessing in the NFL to have continuity until you kind of hit this wall of, it is complacency at a level, right? Like it's not intentional complacency. It's not like they're not giving effort, but like there's just not a lot of new to it. And so, you know, I think that's maybe the interesting dynamic of Shepard that's really tough to put your finger on, right? Like at some point, people got a pulse on what he is and how he's changed. And, you know, when did it start to turn? It was like that 8 to 10 game mark. And that's football, right? It's adjustments to adjustments. And the league caught up to his fastball, if you will. And he didn't quite have the changeup or the secondary pitches developed yet. And so that's the next evolution for a young coordinator. And that goes to Jeff's point, right? Like, can you be patient and wait for that to develop? You know, the alternative is starting over and bringing in somebody else with a different schematic vision. Now you got personnel you've got to change out, and you know that can just as quickly go south as it does go the other way. And so you know, they're in a little bit of a difficult spot right now that they've got to navigate, but I think the scheme can work. I know we talk about it man. It's still man like 35% of the time, right? Like they're still playing zone. They really have to tighten up their zone concepts. That's where I lean with what you're saying about bringing in a senior defensive consultant. Find somebody that's got more of a mastery of zone coverage. You know, I see these other teams with missing guys, Packers, you know, are missing some guys there in the opener. Like the zones were still so tight with their rules, right? Like polish that up. And like I said, give me a speed guy just to add to the front, to add some dynamics. I think people will be off of Aleem McNeil's back next year when he's a full year removed from that recovery and he's getting closer back to the guy that he was. And, you know, we'll see if Tyleek was a hit. You know, I'm not willing to go there yet. DJ Reader's a really good player. Wasn't a really good player this year, but historically has been. Those are big shoes to fill. And to get back to the Reader of 2024, like, you know, that will be an important piece as well.
Yeah, I think the other side too, the offense, which, you know, Dan Campbell, I think he's, in my opinion, if you ask Dan behind the scenes, I think he would ultimately prefer not to call plays. I think he had to call plays given the circumstances of John Morton just not working out. And it's easier said than done for Dan to go out there and be like, this is the vision I have, and I'm going to call plays, because clearly John Morton and him, or at least John, was having a hard time as kind of a – He's an older guy, but still a second time, I think, OC in the NFL. The question is, do they bring in an offensive coordinator this offseason? Is it someone they go get outside the organization, someone more established? Or could you see another promote from within type of scenario? I think that could be on the table as well. I know Hank Fraley's interviewed for OC jobs. Scotty Montgomery's a guy that's very bright. Not sure fans, including myself, would probably be as happy with that one, but anything can happen. Where are you guys at with just the OC side of the ball before we move on here? Do you think Dan kind of gives play calling duties back to his OC? And B, do you have kind of a feeling it'll be more outside, or there's a very good chance it could be an internal hire next season?
Colt, no one should lead on this one, but I want to see if you agree with me on this point. I think the opposite of what Jeff said. I think Dan Campbell reluctantly gave up play calling this offseason and wanted to do the job and didn't. I don't know what he feels now, but I think we know that he really enjoys it. And if in a vacuum, I think his preference would be to maintain that role and adjust the other things around him.
I think Dan likes calling plays for sure. I still remember him joking with us, being coy about who would call plays when Ben took over. And he's like, hey, it might be me. You never know. But I do think there's a part of him that enjoys it and the craftsmanship involved with it. But yeah, you know, we'll see. Like, I'd have to take a closer look at some of the, you know, aspects that he was pulled away from, I guess, just becoming the play caller. Because, you know, one thing he told us was a little bit reluctant just only to take over only because he knows what's going to be required of him. Not to say that he didn't like it, because we just established I think he does like it. But, you know, when you do that, make that change midseason, it can pull you in a bunch of different directions and take you away from some of your head coaching responsibilities. I don't know if I can point to a couple things that are as examples of that, but I'm sure that's happened behind closed doors this year. You know, Dan said, you never know. You know, he talked about how much he trusts John Morton and values his opinion and how integral he is to the operation. But I don't know how many examples of coaches that have taken play calling responsibilities away from their OC where that OC is retained the following year. You probably point to a few, but nothing off the top of my head, I guess. And, you know, you go back to the Eagles a couple years ago, they made coordinator changes back-to-back years, and they got to a Super Bowl because of it, both sides of the ball. So I don't know if that's the route Dan wants to go. That doesn't really sound like Dan would fire both coordinators a year after replacing his two before. But if there's one to go, it would probably be John Morton, just because, you know, Dan is an offensive guy himself. And if he wants to continue calling plays, he can bring in someone else that can, you know, maybe help him on a closer basis. But if not, you know, maybe he does relinquish that play calling duty again to someone he trusts. Like Brian Daboll is available. They go way back. I don't know if that's, I'm just throwing a name out here. I'm not really reporting anything, obviously, but if there's a guy out there that's available and Dan trusts to call plays, a guy that's done this before, I could see him giving it up and maybe the offense being better for it. You know, we'll see.
The pitching of OC candidates is so hard, right? Like, you can't make lateral moves in this league. So your options are a retread that's out of the job currently, or, you know, promoting a young guy, probably with minimal experience, right? And so you're back kind of in that weird phase, and, you know, Daboll falls under the retread category, and obviously he bombed with the Giants and bombed with Daniel Jones, who kind of golf-like, right? Yeah. I mean, in the skill set, who did Daboll succeed with? Josh Allen, who I'm, you know, not saying anything crazy here, not golf-like, right? And so I mean, Daboll might be fine, right? I know I've kind of thrown out there multiple times, Kafka, you know, if he were to become available, I kind of like the guy that worked with Reed and brought some juice to that Giants squad and understands a commitment to the run game and has kind of all the little things, right? And, you know, fresh eyes, but who knows if he'll be available. I think it's something, you know, Colt and I probably will both look at as, you know, who are the names out there. We just haven't got there yet. Mm-hmm. But I don't know, like, if I had to place a wager today, like Dan Campbell or the field, probably still leaning Campbell, just based on what I know. I'm not saying it's the right move. It's just, that's kind of where I think this thing will end up. You know, and it'll be interesting. I know you talked about, Colton, like the what was lost, right, in this switch, and inevitably some stuff we maybe couldn't perceive, whether it was game management or challenges or, you know, even like being a little bit more involved in the defense. It's a topic that I just can't wait to get into at the owners' meetings, right? That's where we have kind of this 30 minutes, 40 minutes of uninterrupted, just beat writer driven questions with Dan Campbell, where it's probably their most reflective time of the year, because they've gotten through their self-scout and they're not fully turning the page to 2026 quite yet. And so we know Dan has the ability to be honest and reflective and self-aware. So I'm really interested what he's going to have to say at that time of year, which I think, what are we talking about? Like mid to late March.
Yeah. And I do want to say something real quick, just because it was a big conversation when Morton had his play calling duties taken away, but like, you know, and we talked about a lot this episode, the offensive line, like when you don't have the offensive line to do what you want to do, whether it's fourth down, whether it's a run game, like it can create challenges for anybody that's calling plays. And, you know, when Dan took over play calling, I felt like one of the reasons he did it was to kind of show Morton how he likes the offense to be ran. But when Dan took over, there were some ups and there were some downs for sure. And like the offensive line issues still were a factor in some of those games that Dan took over, a lot of the games that Dan was calling plays for. So it's like, you know, Morton was maybe a little blunt in his assessment of how things were going with the offensive line, but I don't think he was necessarily wrong. I actually wrote that at the time. Like, for what they want to do and the team they want to be, like, you need a consistent, potent offensive line, and they just didn't have that. And it felt like they, if there's a critique in there, it's that they were too reliant and they probably took too long to realize that offensive line was not a strength anymore. It felt like they kept trying to will that into existence when it just wasn't happening. And they had to look in the mirror and come to that realization. It probably happened too late. And at that point, you can't do the same things you want to do. It's going to hurt you in some areas. So, you know, Morton, I know people were mad at him earlier in the year, but I do think a lot of the issues were with the offensive line. Now, another thing I'll say, just having said all that, but when you see them play the Vikings, that's where the Ben Johnson impact is, I think, felt the most, because he always had answers to those Brian Flores defenses. And when they were throwing zero blitzes at him, he would have, you know, quick crossing plays in the game plan for when those looks were coming. Did not feel like, and I know Taylor Decker wasn't playing, have Kingsley at center, but a little bit different than what Ben was dealing with a year ago and past years. But it didn't feel like the Lions were able to adjust to what Flores was throwing at them. I mean, that's just one team. But whenever they played teams with good defensive lines, they just couldn't bully them the way they have in past years. And the adjustments weren't there offensively from the play callers to combat that.
You know, and the nice thing about those Minnesota games, right? Like, we had one with Morton, we had one with Campbell.
We did.
And they looked remarkably similar. I realized the pressures came in a different way. Like, they all were up the gut, and Jahmyr Gibbs was getting run over in the first one. They didn't adjust, but they still gave up 5 sacks in both of them, and they still finished with sub 70-yard rushing in both of them. And you could argue that that Vikings defense was more shorthanded when Campbell got a hold of them with Grenard and Metellus out with injuries. So, you know, offensive line is certainly the starting point there, but you know, Campbell didn't solve it. That's the best example of Campbell didn't solve all the problems.
No doubt.
So before we got about 11 minutes left, I want to talk Lions Bears. I know we talked to,
they're playing.
I want to revisit. What'd you say?
They're still playing this week.
Yeah, they are. Right. Yeah, we are. Yeah. I still have a game to cover, even though it's a meaningless game, but I mean, you're going to get Ben Johnson this weekend. All right. In Chicago.
He's just going to unload on them.
We're going to see like 6 stumble bums.
That's the first series. It's just 6 straight. Jack Campbell's like, what in the hell, man?
They're going to, especially coming off a loss too. I just feel like now they're even more pissed off. But whatever. I digress. I'll go to you guys. Dan Campbell's going to play starters. That's what probably his approach.
He says.
Now there are probably, like I said, kind of at the beginning of the show, maybe some players that could be on the fence of playing depending on the injury they're dealing with. But where are you guys at with this game, playing starters, the belief that momentum or not that necessarily momentum could carry over, but maybe ending the season on a high note could potentially translate the next season or the off season. I don't know. Where are you guys at with that conversation?
I think momentum can carry over, but not a single game. I use this example a lot, and I might even get the year wrong, but 2000 Ravens, I think it was. That was like that defense was finally figuring it out, and they closed the previous season with 4 wins, really dominant. Ray Lewis and Ed Reed were kind of coming into their own, and I think they finished 8-8 or something like that. Didn't make the playoffs, but you're like, oh, yeah, like this team looks like they figured it out. And then the next year they just ran. I think it was like a historically great defense. They ran over everybody, won the Super Bowl. And like that felt like momentum that could carry over. Like the Lions have no momentum. They've gone win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, win, loss, 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 loss. And they lost to Max, whatever, the guy that ties women to railroad tracks in 1920s movies. Like that, like just,
it's a
just
wild,
a terrible story. Finish. Yeah, well, that's what that mustache made me think of. And so, like, no, they're not gonna gain all this great momentum out of potentially beating the Bears. Just not gonna happen. And you look at it, there's like 30 dudes that are free agents. Like, there's gonna be so many guys that aren't even here next year. Who's gaining momentum? David right. Shaw is the pass game coordinator. What? Come on. Like, so I do want to see some young players this week. I do. It's not all of them. You know, you have 53 guys on the roster. You have to have 48 active. You can't bench 22 starters. Like, it's not realistic. You can maybe throw some guys on IR and bring up some practice squad guys. But, like, there's a limit on how many guys you could just throw out there without it just being a total absolute train wreck. But, like, honestly, I'd love to see Gio Manu get activated and start this week. I'd love to see a little bit of Tyrus Wheat. You know, is that a guy worth bringing back? Can you squeeze in a couple series for Miles Frazier or Nick Whiteside or Dominic Lovett? Hell, give me Jackson Meeks at tight end. Let's see what he learned in practice all week. Like go out there and go block an end. Let's see if you can do it at 220 pounds. Like, I don't know. Give me some series of some Mekhi Wingo. Dude's been absent since week two. Like, DJ Reader doesn't need to play in this game. I understand Mekhi Wingo, DJ Reader, not a one-to-one equivalent, but like, find some reps for Mekhi Wingo in some pass rush situations. Let's see what that pent-up aggression from practicing without playing for 3 months or 4 months can offer. And, you know, bubble wrap some of those guys. You know, Jared Goff's going to play. You know, you can't piss off guys like the Raiders did with Max Crosby, because that is a thing, right? Like, these are competitive guys. They want to play, but there are a few guys that are going to be checked out. Established veterans, probably guys heading into free agency. Like, take those guys out and put some young guys in. Let's see what they have, if they have anything to offer for 2026.
I think that's where I'm at. The guys that are already banged up, and there are a lot of them coming out of that Vikings game, a lot of those guys don't need to play. If they want to, like, Saint might try to battle it out, I guess, but I don't really think he needs to be playing. Maybe that opens up more targets for JMO and Isaac Tislaw, but I don't know. Like, I look at draft position. I know they're not probably thinking about this. Dan's certainly not. He's not thinking about the draft yet. But, you know, if you can get up to their 15th right now, if you can, there can be a difference between pick 12 and 13 and pick, you know, 15, 16, 17. Like, that can matter in a draft, the type of prospects that is available to you at that point. So I think that's
blue chip demarcation.
Yeah. I mean, I think it matters. Like, there's a difference there between five picks in the middle of the first round. So that's on my mind. I know this has been a hot button topic. I tweeted about this after the game, I think on the 26th, and a lot of people were in my mentions saying, "Oh, that's bullshit. We don't want to play to lose," but there are some benefits of a fourth place schedule, you know? And I know,
oh, you're right. Sure.
I'm going there. Yeah. So, like, the difference this year, I think, would be they'd be getting the Cardinals, the Titans, mm-hmm. and the Giants, as opposed yep. to the Rams, the Commanders, maybe with the healthy Jaden Daniels next year, yep. and the Colts, I believe, which, yep. you know, they're kind of an interesting team, but we'll see about Daniel Jones. But, yeah, I mean, that can be a massive difference. I mean, just the records from those teams alone, it's like 23 and 25 versus 9 and 39 between third and fourth, the records from this past year. So that's a major difference. And I know nobody wants to, you know, you want to play the best. You want to be that team that's like, oh, we'll play anyone, anywhere. Sure. But if you can get a break here after the gauntlet you just went through this year in some ways, like, you know, maybe try to set that up for yourself. And there are ways to kind of manipulate it. Not to say, even with a healthy squad, I don't know if this Lions team is beating the Bears and how good they're playing, but if you want to get some young guys some looks and try to set yourself up better for the future, one game, I really don't think it's going to define your culture or tear things apart and
yep.
you know, change everything. You can still be a gritty team if you rest guys in week 18. Like, that doesn't change to me. I don't know. That's just me.
And look at some of these teams that did benefit. And look at last place schedules changes three games.
Yeah.
It's not that big of a deal. But three games, if the Lions were three more wins in the win column against teams who the first place teams they beat, right? They lost to Philadelphia. They lost to Kansas City. I'm not naming all the first place teams they played, but you know, the Patriots this year, like, benefited from playing a last place schedule. The Bears this year benefited from playing a last place schedule. I believe the 49ers did as well over there in the NFC West. And so, you know, again, if you can pick up three, I don't know, closer to easy wins over the course of a 17 game schedule, it's helpful, right? It helps you in the division race. It maybe helps you secure a home game in the playoffs. It maybe helps you for the number one seed. It matters. And so, if you're going to have a shitty season, which this was in terms of relative to expectations, might as well reap some of the benefits with a little bit better draft pick and a little bit easier schedule next year.
Yeah, I agree with it. Someone in the chat just said there's a huge difference between 9-8 and 8-9. Would you want to be called a loser? Yes, I would.
Nobody's going to remember it five years from now.
Yeah, no one. Tim, you know this. No one's going. By the way, no one's going to look back at this game when you're picking, like Colton said, 13-14 in the draft. We're going to be sitting there with pom-pom. I mean, all the fans are going to be like, yeah, you're going to get some really good player at 13-14. And you're going to have a lesser schedule, which, by the way, with the narratives right now, you want a better schedule. Okay, you want to make the playoffs. You want to contend for your division. So I think everyone would be much happier with that outcome.
Now, the only thing I'll say off that is that, you know, the NFL is about narratives, right? You know, there are narratives about Jared Goff after that Vikings game. Bunch of narratives about Dan this year. If the Bears do what Ben Johnson probably wants to do to the Lions, and what a lot of those fans want to see happen to the Lions after what happened in week two, the narratives will be flying out of the mouths of all these people, all these national analysts, whoever, about how Ben Johnson stuck to Dan Campbell. This is the changing of the guards in the NFC North. Like, all those takes will be even worse than they already are now. So I do feel like where Dan's coming from is, hey, if we want to win this game, so this shit, like, does not continue. Because I feel like part of him is, you know, paid attention to some of that. Maybe not to the extent, but I think a little bit of him cares about that. Dan's a petty guy sometimes. So
former player too.
He's a former player, right? He understands narratives. So, you know, you don't want to lay over and lose like 52-7, because then if you have that happen, then, you know, people are going to talk about your team. But if you're okay with that, you know, I guess go for it. But I do think he wants to play these guys, and he's going to try to go out there and win. So we'll see.
Yeah. Those, by the way, if they lost by 1 point, First Take would still open it up with Ben Johnson, you know, talking about the changing of the guard. I mean, that stuff, I can already see it, Colton. Now that you mentioned it, it's already going to happen.
People watch First Take? Who knew?
No, they don't. No one's watching First Take. But you do watch Lions Collective, by the way, which we're proud of you guys for tuning in today. And not on a Wednesday, but on a Tuesday. We'll be back next week. No more programming. All right. And the holidays kind of got in, mixed it up. We'll see what we're recapping next week. Either a 52-7 outcome, or maybe a win. Maybe. Who knows? I'm just telling you.
We have to make this. We have to do official dog and pony predictions.
I'll do this. Shout out to Kyle, by the way, as always, from the Dog and Pony Show Brewing. And, you know, I know we have been very, very bad with our predictions, unless we're jinxing the Lions, which sometimes happens. Except when Colton decided not to. Thanks, Colton, by the way.
Yeah.
But this one, fellas, I don't think – I'm assuming Dan's going to play the starters. So I don't think the game will be is going to be ugly. I think they'll lose ultimately. But assuming that most starters will be playing, I think this is probably going to be like a – to me, this is going to be like a 27-20 game. I think the Lions will hang in there, because unless, by the way, Lions have done a really good job taking care of the ball. The Bears defense eats off turnovers. They're actually not that good statistically. I say that now, fast forward, they get like four turnovers in this game, the Lions, but if they can take care of the ball, I think the Lions will be able to put up some points. I just think the Bears are going to score way more, not way more, but a touchdown more to win the game. So I'll take the Bears, but I think the Lions hang in there.
32 degrees and sunny, Colton. Not crazy. But I don't know. Lions are really good at taking care of the ball until Christmas, apparently. And then they were Santa Claus giving it away to everybody. I have a tough time seeing Lions win. I do think the Bears are going to try to run it up. I don't know if they'll be successful, but they do have something to play for, right? Like, the 2 seed versus 3 seed is a significant difference. Home game in the second round, like, they want that. They want people coming to Soldier Field and playing at their house. Give me 33-24 Bears.
Yeah. I think they have a chance to torch the secondary, but I will go 34-28 Bears. Keep it so close. You get the loss. That'll help you springboard you into the offseason. So, yeah. I don't know if that's happy. People will be happy with that outcome, but, hey, that's the one I'm giving to you. That's probably going to be wrong.
Yeah, there you go. But to be fair, we're all three on the same page a lot, so maybe that we'll see what happens there. Again, that's the pick of the week presented by Dog and Pony Show Brewing. We are Lions Collective. We'll be back next week. Thanks for tuning in. Hit the like button on the stream. Help us. It helps push it out in the algorithm. And subscribe for our live shows and our clips. But until next week, we will catch you all. Happy New Year. Have a great rest of your week. And go Lions. We'll catch you guys.